Welcome. You are about to take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bouffet on the Love by Intuition show. For the next hour, allow her to prepare you in becoming a magnet for a profound love-infused relationship by identifying and focusing on solutions through love. Awaken the light within and let your essence shine. And now, here's Deborah Bouffet on Love by Intuition, all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Welcome, everyone. Bonjour, mes amis. And yes, here I am, Deborah Bouffet, founder, owner of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, the Kids for Love Project, which is amazing, and the Love by Intuition show. We have a great show for you today, and it's all about self-love. When you hear love, a lot of times people think of one-on-one, but it's really going within and finding the love for self, and then turning that around and serving the world. We have an excellent guest for you tonight, and I should mention that this is a live Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Boston, and the show is heard every week at 9 p.m. here at 1510, and then you can catch the Love by Intuition show on our own station, Dream Visions, the number 7, radio.com, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, I had Dr. Larry Dossey back last year, and I was so enthralled with how he's making a difference in the world and has done such excellent work for years. I wanted to have him back. So for those that may not be aware, if you're under a rock, Dr. Larry Dossey is a distinguished Texas physician, deeply rooted in the scientific world, former chief of staff of Medical City Dallas Hospital, and he has become an internationally influential advocate of the role of mind in health and the role of spirituality in health care. He's written 12 books, and he's just an amazing individual. So coming from Dallas, Texas, welcome to the show, Dr. Larry.
Well, it's so great to be back with you, Deborah. I remember fondly our interview last year, and I'm looking forward to another one.
Thank you. I as well. So let's get into it, and let's explain to listeners that may not be aware, what is one mind?
Well, it's a term which actually has a very ancient origin. You can trace the idea of the one mind, or a collective consciousness that envelops all human beings, back to 4,000 years ago, and something in Hinduism called the Akashic Records. If you fast forward in history, you can find this idea of a collective consciousness emerging even in modern times in science. One of my heroes in science, the great physicist Erwin Schrödinger, who won a Nobel Prize in physics in 1933, believed and explicitly wrote books about the fact that, in his judgment, there is only what he called one mind, in which all so-called individual minds participate. And if you look back in the mid-20th century to the work of Carl Jung, the great Swiss psychologist, he was a champion of what he called the collective unconscious, which is a dead ringer for this idea that I'm talking about, which I term the one mind. William James, the father of American psychology, was a proponent of this idea. I mention all of this, Deborah, because when some people hear this idea that all of our individual minds are sort of subsumed under a huge umbrella called the one mind, they may think this is really getting spooky and really far out. But my point in bringing up these other opinions is to say that, look, this is not a New Age California idea. It's rooted in ancient history, and it has been affirmed by some of the key figures in 20th century science and psychology. So from the get-go, I want to say that there's nothing really spooky about this idea.
Absolutely not. And anyone out there who has connected with Source, God, whatever you choose to call it, it is an energy. We are all energy, and it is the source of where we came. And you know what I find fascinating is we've talked about different people have spoken of this hundreds of years ago, and yet some people still don't understand or able to wrap their minds around it. One of the questions I had for you, do you find it interesting that after all these years that in 2015 people still struggle with thinking that there's something more or higher than what we are here in regular mainstream, world?
Well, yes and no. I understand how people can, I think, be sidetracked into this channel of thinking that consciousness is just completely inside the skull. It's produced by the human brain, and when we die, that's the end of us. The lights go out, and there isn't anything else, and the physical death represents the total annihilation of all that we call mind and consciousness. That has been the traditional point of view in modern science, which just dominates our culture. But I think that that's wrong-headed, and I think it's a fashion that is going out of style, basically, as I try to explain in this book, basically because of not just people's experiences that they are connected to a greater whole, but also, very importantly, experiments which show that in order to explain the outcome of these studies, you've got to suggest that minds are connected at a distance and through space and time. So I think we've pretty much been hypnotized collectively by the emphasis from materialistic science that, mind equals brain, and when that's gone, then that's all there is. So I think we're weaseling out of this slowly, kicking and screaming. I think it's about time.
Absolutely. And so we talk about non-local consciousness and extraordinary happenings. Share a couple of the things that come to mind with the book. It's packed, I should say, for those out there listening, with information and enlightenment and a lot of history, really, of how we've come from where we are today, should I say.
Well, I've spent most of my adult life practicing internal medicine, and I'll just resort back to some of my experiences with physicians to make the point. I thought that probably physicians would be the last people who would come around to this idea that minds interconnect and consciousness can operate outside the present and outside the individual. And I was surprised by that. Over the years, my colleagues would begin to share with me some of their experiences when they found out I was interested in this idea. And it's got to the point where I think most physicians have a long laundry list of these things that don't fit in conventional science. And under certain conditions, they'll share those experiences. I'll never forget a few years back, I was giving a talk to a large group of doctors who were gathered together for a continuing medical education conference sponsored by Harvard Medical School and the University of New Mexico, and they wanted me to talk about this idea of non-local consciousness. So I shared with them a lot of my experiences and sort of gave them permission to talk about weird things that they'd experienced. And at the Q&A session, one female internist stood up in the middle of this huge group and said, "Well, I'm not surprised about what you've described." She said, "I get numbers in my dreams." She said, "I dream the specific values of my patient's laboratory tests before I even ordered the tests." I thought that was pretty good. And then it went from there. You know, one doctor would, after the other, would get up and sort of up the ante by describing an even weirder experience. And here's the thing that I was saddened by, Deborah. Many of these doctors would begin their story by saying, "Now, I've never told anybody about this in my life."
Yes.
But, and then they would go on to reveal these experiences. What this meant to me is that doctors are hungry to share these kinds of studies, which have been transformative for some of them, but they're sort of muzzled because they think that, you know, it will be ruinous to their reputations and so on. They're really concerned about their colleagues may think if they go public with this stuff. But I think it's all around us. You scratch the surface of not just doctors, but also nurses and anyone in the healing professions, and they will tell you the things that will just knock your socks off.
Right, right. And you're giving them a platform to be able to speak to that. And in essence, their experiences are helping to heal their patients better than if they didn't receive these messages. So when you look at it from that perspective, why not open up the channels and receive as much information as we can?
Well, that's exactly right. And one thing that happens when someone opens up to the idea that our thoughts can connect with other people is the substantial body of research that shows that people's healing intentions and healing thoughts and compassionate wishes, often called prayer, for other people who are in need can actually result in statistical changes for the better in that individual who's maybe at a distance and not even be aware that the doctor or the nurse or the healer is trying to intercede for them in their need for healing. There are dozens of studies now, not just in people, but in things like mice and rabbits and bacteria even, and even in test tubes with biochemical reactions going on, showing conclusively, in my judgment, that people's thoughts can change the state of the physical world out there, including people who are in need of healing. I think it's a shame that this evidence has not been recognized. And the reason it hasn't is what you alluded to before. There's just the prejudice and bias against it because, you know, all good scientists know that all this stuff is too weird to be true, so they won't look at the evidence. But what I've tried to do is to say, look, this is just a bad habit. I mean, we need to get over this and follow science wherever it may lead. And where it is leading is to a new conception and a view of consciousness.
Right. It's really going beyond what everyone is comfortable with. And the humanity, for the most part, change isn't good. And it takes a while for people to wrap their minds around it. But I think more and more with near-death experiences, and I wanted to talk about the savants because a lot of people don't realize that someone that isn't able to speak or even communicate, and many have been thrown away, per se, and then in your book, someone comes along, a nurse, and adopts one of these kids or people and finds the beauty of the gift within. So speak to, since I've mentioned this, I've got so much going around in my thoughts and all, but speak to the savants as to what they really bring to the table.
Well, they bring a lot to the table in the way of challenges to our conventional way of thinking about the mind. Savants are people who, as you've already said, usually are severely mentally retarded. I mean severely. Many of these kids can't even tie their shoes. Some hardly know their names. Almost none of them can read, so they could not acquire information the way most of us acquire it. Sometimes they are possessed by astonishing gifts. The individual you just mentioned was blind and retarded, and all of a sudden one night his adoptive parents heard these beautiful sounds coming from the piano. This savant, this terribly retarded young man, had begun to play tunes with exactitude and great finesse, hardly missing a note, which he had heard over the radio. Where does this come from? This is an astonishing a demonstration that people can acquire knowledge by bypassing the physical senses, because there is no way known to modern science where a severely retarded individual could hear a song over the radio who has never played the piano before and play it perfectly. So this poses the problem about our conventional views of thinking that all this is brain-related. These people don't have brains that are capable of that.
Right.
Let me tell you that there is a study that is about to be published by a Harvard-trained psychologist, a psychiatrist named Diane Powell. And I would advise our listeners to keep their eyes open, because when this is published, I'm sure it's going to make headlines everywhere. Dr. Powell was contacted by two nurses who did home care for this severely retarded autistic girl who was about 10 or 12 years old. And they said, "I know that we know that this sounds crazy, but she's reading our mind." This girl was barely communicative. She was absolutely withdrawn. But she developed such a special relationship and a loving emotional connection with these two therapists that they brought out something new in her. So Dr. Powell agreed to meet and test this girl, and so in sophisticated testing, when she would give this string of numbers and letters to the therapist and have them just think about them in their mind without revealing anything else, she then asked the autistic young person to write them down. She would get sometimes 10 out of 10 of these things right, and usually something like 8 out of 10 being correct. But if you do a statistical analysis of their ability to explain this kid's talent by just saying, "Oh, it just happened according to chance," the odds against a chance of this girl doing this is just astronomical. They tried to fake the kid out every way possible, and they were unable to do it. And since word has got around about this, Dr. Powell has been contacted by therapists of autistic children around the country saying, our patient is doing this also. So I relate this to show you that it cannot all be brain that accounts for these stupendous talents, and also that once we give ourselves permission to look in these directions, we're going to find more evidence of this sort of thing than we had any idea existed.
Absolutely. Now, believing in we have more than one life, and or facets of our souls are living in different times all simultaneously, if we were to look at it that way, These kinds of kids, like this girl that you speak of, she could really be pulling from information from another lifetime or from another soul and bringing it into this lifetime. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I believe, as I describe in the book, that if all of our minds are connected, not just in the present with all the people who are now alive, but if this does go back into the past and also into the future, we can conceive that there may be a tremendous pool of intelligence and information that we can dip into under certain conditions and extract information from the not just from other people who are alive currently, but people who have lived and who will live into the future. Now, I think that serious evidence exists to suggest that this is what happens. I'll give you one example I talk about in the book, and it has to do with the most famous inventor in the history of the United States, Thomas Edison. And he was asked how did he account for all of these marvelous inventions of his? The phonograph, the moving picture apparatus, and the electric light bulb, and on and on and on. And his memorable reply was, "I've never created anything." He said, "Ideas come to me from the outside." He said, "They come to me from the universe." He said, "I am just a recording apparatus taking information in from a different source." Now, this did not become a popular viewpoint in, even in Edison's time, because people then, as now, didn't want to think that America's great inventor, was getting information from the universe instead of inside his own head. And so this has been shoved to the side. But this is a man who was a no-nonsense inventor who was willing to go public about this. In the book, I cite a whole string of famous artists and composers and mathematicians who claimed the same thing, that they received information from the outside, from some source that was external to themselves. So I think there's a lot of evidence, if we take these people seriously, that forces us to say there are external sources of information. It doesn't all come from our acquisition through reading or logic or intellectuality or anything like that, although those things certainly can play a role.
Right, absolutely. Well, we need to take our first break. And for everyone out there, the book that we're speaking to is One Mind, How Our Individual Mind is Part of a Greater Consciousness and Why It Matters. We'll be back in a moment.
Experience a different yet profound healing with Reconnective Healing. Includes yet expands beyond any and all known forms of energy healing. The Reconnective Healing Spectrum is comprised of the full healing and evolutionary continuum of energy, light, and information. It allows for healings that are not just physical, not just mental, not just emotional, yet go beyond that to bring healing that includes the evolution of your very being and essence. Deborah Beauvais, trained and certified by world-renowned Dr. Eric Pearl, offers appointment hours at Seekonk Family Chiropractic in Seekonk, Massachusetts. For questions or to set up both distance or local sessions, call Deborah at 508-431-1959. Again, 508-431-1959. Or go to lovebyintuition.com. That's lovebyintuition.com.
The Dream Vision 7 Radio Network presents Kids for Love. It's a project, a mission, and a radio show. Come join Deborah Beauvais and her young co-hosts every second Sunday at 6 p.m. as we celebrate kids making a difference. We invite other kids to join in for the spirited conversation filled with creative ideas and possibilities to start their own mission. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world by getting inspired to help others in need. Kids for Love Project. Celebrating kids that empower others. That's every second Sunday at 6 p.m.
Do you wish to have inner peace while living in challenging times? Are you unhappy and don't know why? Life consists of either a path of love or fear. When we choose a path of love, we learn and grow. If we choose a path of fear, we stay stuck in negativity. The time is now to heal ourselves and the world by choosing a different way. Through the path to your power, your inner light, you will find self-love and experience amazing changes. You can have inner peace, wonderful relationships, good health, and a flow of abundance. Complete the circle of illuminating love using our tools and learn how to retain your power throughout life. To learn more about the path to your power and the Divine Love Within consultations, call Deborah Beauvais at 508-226-1723 or go to lovebyintuition.com.
J.T. Lewis is the big brother of Jesse Lewis, who died in Sandy Hook Elementary on December 14, 2012, while saving the lives of nine of his classmates. J.T. found comfort after Rwandan orphan genocide survivors reached out to him from their country to express their condolences and share their personal stories of tragedy and healing. Inspired by the love that was shown to him, JT started Newtown Helps Africa, a nonprofit organization that helps young people in Africa and beyond who've suffered personal tragedy and have shown resilience. He successfully sent one young Rwandan woman to college for 4 years and plans to do much more, all the while inspiring many young people around the world to turn hardship into an opportunity to make the world a better place. Link on to NewtownHelpsRwanda.org.
Invite the Kids for Love Project, an enrichment program, into your school, classroom, or wellness center. Kids for Love Project is focused on teaching kids unconditional love for self and others. The project is a journey into self-discovery. It consists of fun, creative tools to learn self-love, like I choose love, I am love, I stand in love, and utilizing one's energies with reconnective healing and tuning into one's intuition for inner guidance, plus connecting to our natural surroundings. Kids who hold love for self do not bully or harm others. Let's cultivate a kinder world that holds compassion for all. Teaching the power of love to our kids is the way. To learn more or to bring Kids for Love Project to your school, contact Deborah Beauvais, 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to our Kids for Love Project on Facebook.
And we are back, and you're listening to the Love by Intuition show, and my guest today is Dr. Larry Darcy, who is an internal medicine physician and author of 12 books. To get in touch with him, you just go on his site. It's Larry Darcy, DOSSEYMD.com. Darcy, again, is D as in dog, OSSEYMD, LarryDarcyMD.com. And now that we're back, I wanted to talk with you about, and it may be tied into being a twin as well, Dr. Larry, but when did you become conscious? You're entrenched into the medical world and the scientific mind realm, should we say, and like at what time did you actually wake up and become conscious of all of what you share now?
Well, I'm glad you put it that way, because there was a long period in my life where I was really not conscious. I mean, it was like being under stage 3 anesthesia or something like that. I mean, I really wasn't interested in any of this stuff growing up. One of the things that really turned my head around is that I nearly dropped out of medicine because of a severe medical problem. It was classical migraine headaches, which were absolutely severe, accompanied not just with severe headache, but with a horrible nausea and vomiting. And the worst thing was partial blindness. Actually, it's got so bad in medical school under the stress that I actually tried to drop out, because I was convinced that it was just a matter of time until I was in a critical medical situation and had one of these attacks of partial blindness and would hurt or even kill somebody.
My, that sounds like a cluster migraine.
Oh, it was terrible. And my advisor wouldn't let me drop out. He said, "You're overdoing this. You're just worried to making a mountain out of a molehill, and these headaches get better as you get older, so relax." And I didn't know how to relax. That was one of the problems. Well, the problem got worse, not better. And by the time I finished my medical training and postgraduate training, I was really desperate. But this was in the early 70s, Deborah, and about that time, biofeedback erupted on the national scene, which was all about learning how to relax your body and developing a sense of connection between your thoughts and emotions and what happened downstream in your body. I chased all over the country learning how to be a subject in one of these biofeedback experiments, and it was almost miraculous. Just within about 5 or 6 training sessions, the migraine thing almost went completely away. I was astonished and actually hooked on mind-body medicine from there on out. And I established a biofeedback laboratory for my patients in my medical practice and actually taught biofeedback for many, many years. And I began to follow the the research in various aspects of mind-body research, which really exploded in the 70s and 80s. And then I began to meditate and followed the research, looking at remote healing, prayer-based healing, healing intentions, and so on. And, you know, one thing leads to another in these matters, and the actual structure and operations of consciousness began to capture my attention, and that's really how I got to write this book about the one mind.
Mm. And as you've said in the book, and we all know, once you become conscious, you can't go back. It's not something that you can let go. When you feel that, it's a glorious, glorious feeling, and you have a heightened reverence for all life and gratitude and compassion, and you want to serve others, and you want to develop that and become a better person. At least that's how I feel. And you just want to continue to be better and live from that, what I call consciousness, but living from that place of love. So,
well, I agree completely. I mean, yeah. As you say, when you pass through the eye of that needle and begin to see things in a different way, there really is no going back. And the whole world begins to take on a different complexion. And our ethical and moral imperatives also begin to change. If I may say so, I think this is directly relevant to the problems we face on our earth, because we have become obsessed with the cult of the individual. And it's resulted in a universal sense of isolation and competition, and it has resulted in an epidemic of greed and selfishness. And anybody who has been awake for any length of time knows that this has led to environmental issues which we may not survive. And so I see this idea of relatedness and oneness and unity and connectedness as entirely relevant to the fate of our species on this planet. And if we don't live into a deeper appreciation of how we're all connected and unified, I'm not sure that the future is going to look at all like we would want it to look. So I think this is tied up with survival in the largest aspect possible.
Yes, I agree. And to take it a step further, what's on my mind is when we resonate in the love, we change. We take care of our bodies. We don't want to hurt anyone with words or with anything else. And I feel that if we, and this is part of the Kids for Love project, if we teach the kids how to love themselves, they're not going to pick up a weapon. And to take it even a step further, and we might run out of time, but I'd like to know your perspective. In light of so much killing, we need to stop the killing, and how we do that is with ourselves holding that love. And if if you're writing or speaking or whatever you do in your world of work, if you hurt someone with words, that's not coming from a place of love, and you're creating the opposite of what we all desire with resonating in peace. The only way we can do that is always be thinking of what we say and what we write. And in light of what happened in Paris and what's happening everywhere, one has to stop and think of what their objective is, and is it coming from that place of love? Is it serving? Is it bringing everyone together, or is it pulling everyone apart? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I talk to a lot of skeptics who think that when we drift into talking about the importance of love and what goes on in other cultures and in our own in terms of increased violence and so forth, they just begin to nod off and blink their eyes and look away, because love sounds romantic and sentimental, and they don't want to have anything to do with it. I think love is the key to a solution to these problems. I always recall a comment by the great British novelist D.H. Lawrence, who said, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is individuality. And what he was saying is that an individual who is convinced that he is cut from everybody else, builds barriers around him, has a sense of disunity and disconnectedness, and love is impossible in that sort of situation. Love flourishes when we can go beyond this sense of separation from other people. That's why love is an interesting and necessary component to this idea of the one mind, because the one mind is all about getting rid of boundaries and separations in favor of unity and connectedness. I propose that we could even go so far as to revise the golden rule, of which there's a version in every major world religion, and we stop saying, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Right. And we say something like this, be compassionate to others because in some sense they are you.
Absolutely.
So I think that this idea of the one mind, breaking down boundaries and overcoming separation in favor of love and unity, is totally tied up with our ethical and moral and political and diplomatic stances around the world. And I don't think we're going to overcome the epidemic of violence without the insertion of some generous amount of empathy and compassion in the way we live our lives and the way we conduct our foreign policy and so on.
Right, absolutely. I agree with that. And if everyone could just feel the energy of love within and beyond, then they would know what it is and they could use, I mean, number one, you can't stop killing with killing. And if you imagine all that love energy, turn it around and use it for love to help. I mean, there's so much needed in the universe between pollution and saving our planet and the food we eat and everything. There's plenty to do. So exchange that hate energy into actually making a difference in the world. We need to take our next break. The hour is flying by. Everyone stay with us. More with Dr. Larry Darcy.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Sundays 9 to 10 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Sunday, 9 to 10 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Do you wish to have inner peace while living in challenging times? Are you unhappy and don't know why? Life consists of either a path of love or fear. When we choose a path of love, we learn and grow. If we choose a path of fear, we stay stuck in negativity. The time is now to heal ourselves and the world by choosing a different way. Through the path to your power, your inner light, you will find self-love and experience amazing changes. You can have inner peace, wonderful relationships, good health, and a flow of abundance. Complete the circle of illuminating love using our tools and learn how to retain your power throughout life. To learn more about the path to your power and the Divine Love Within consultations, call Deborah Beauvais at 508-226-1723 or go to lovebyintuition.com.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Experience a different yet profound healing with Reconnective Healing. Includes yet expands beyond any and all known forms of energy healing. The Reconnective Healing Spectrum is comprised of the full healing and evolutionary continuum of energy, light, and information. It allows for healings that are not just physical, not just mental, not just emotional, yet go beyond that to bring healing that includes the evolution of your very being and essence. Deborah Beauvais, trained and certified by world-renowned Dr. Eric Pearl, offers appointment hours at Seekonk Family Chiropractic in Seekonk, Massachusetts. For questions or to set up both distance or local sessions, call Deborah at 508-431-1959. Again, 508-431-1959. Or go to lovebyintuition.com. That's lovebyintuition.com.
Everyone to be able to connect with Larry. All his books are there, everything that he's doing, any events. It's LarryDosseyMD.com, Dossey, D as in dog, O-S-S-E-Y, LarryDosseyMD.com. The book we're speaking of is One Mind. And Dr. Larry, share with some of the things, and I have my own ways of, and I'm going around here now, and I have to say, once you become conscious and you do whatever works for you, and it can be a multitude of things, you really can call upon it any time during the day. Not necessarily do you have to sit and meditate for 2 hours, although that would be glorious. But tell us some of the things that you're familiar with and like to do.
Well, I think there are a million ways to access and experience this reality of our connectedness, which I'm calling the one mind. I think the main thing is to realize that you don't have to make this happen. It's right. Part of who we are. We've just forgotten about it, and we have to become aware of it. So we have to get out of the way so that the realization can come through. And so the question is, you know, how on earth do we do this? I think a lot of people are just born with this awareness. I think we've probably all seen people, although young in years, they seem to be advanced souls who just come into this life knowing these larger connections. But there also has always been these other spontaneous experiences that shake people up and put them on this different path. We usually call those epiphanies, these sudden, unexpected knowings about how we fit in. And those can be life transformative, from which there's really no going back. You know, there are 15 million Americans now who have had a near-death experience, which is absolutely mind-blowing. I don't recommend that because sometimes, you know, you don't come back from those things. But we need gentler ways of accessing rather than almost dying. Telepathic or clairvoyant experiences, such as in my own experience, my first year in medical practice, I had a series of precognitive dreams about patients I would see the next day, and those were just absolutely transformative for me. You've already mentioned meditation, which basically is a disciplined way of growing into this expanded awareness. I found, as has my wife Barbara, that immersion in wild places has been extremely important for us. I mean, this is a mind-altering way of entering to a sense of communion with the whole world that has been important for us for 40 years. We've arranged our lives so that every August we disappear into mountains, in the Rocky Mountains somewhere, and simply be. And I can't imagine my life working well without periodic exposure to nature. Right. But exposure to beauty of any sort, whether it's music or art or museums and so on, can put people into a frame of mind where the unity and connectedness comes through. I just think that there's so many ways, if we pay attention, that we can tap into this awareness that the fiction is that this is hard. I don't think it's hard. What is hard is blinding ourselves from it and not opening our eyes. You know, we don't have to concoct this. It's factory installed. It comes as part of our original equipment. And so we just have to figure out how to get out of the way and let this manifest in our life. You may have heard of Angelus Arian's Four Rules of Life, which I love, which sums all of this up. She says, four rules of life are: one, show up. Two is pay attention. Three is tell the truth. And four is don't be attached to results. I love that. I mean, I think that sums up so much. I think the mistake that a lot of us make, Deborah, is that we just try too hard to make this happen. And trying to make it happen triggers what's been called the law of reversed effort, where the harder you try, the more it eludes you. So I think opening up and setting an intention are important, but after that, it's a matter of just getting out of the way.
Right, exactly. And for the people that are out there that have had, you know, tumultuous lives within lives, that, you know, I think there comes a time, I know for myself, that I was tired of being a victim, and you want more out of life. And so you start asking questions, you start reading, you start sitting and listening to your thoughts. All those types of things brings you within, and by going within brings you to the one mind, the source of all that we are. And it's fascinating, I find, because we're born in love, as you've said, and we can take a whole lifetime trying to get back to what we already are. But in essence, that's the journey of why we're here.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah,
I think the goal of a lifetime is to open up to this larger perspective. And, you know, this is more than just feel-good stuff. I want to emphasize.
Yeah.
People who learn to sense and be in their connectedness and feel their unity with others are generally healthier, happier, they're wiser, they're more creative, and they have a greater sense of fulfillment. Their lives mean something. And even if people get into the situation where, let's just say, they develop a serious illness or something like that, still this certainty can go with you even through the hard times. I used to tell my patients who were close to dying that, you know, even though we'll try to make the disease go away, if, you know, all else fails and you die, you're just going to have to settle for immortality. and usually that would evoke a chuckle and a little nervous life, but it would get us going to this place where we acknowledge that there's a sense of perfection that can persist even during illness or even life-threatening problems. So I just want to say to people out there that this is who we really are, and anything less than that is being less than what is possible for us. And open up, set an intention, say I'm ready for this, and stand back and get out of the way.
And you end up living a fuller life. And it doesn't have to be all bells and whistles either. It's just the fullness of being in that consciousness. And you mentioned about, you know, the creativity. That's the whole thing. Or should I say, there's so many pieces, but that's a big piece of it, because when you become conscious, you get to feel and see what your gifts are, what you excel at, what rings your bell. And then you can take that and implement it into a business, into the community, you know, an idea, into a solution. And that's really what we need across the universe, the solutions for all the, you know, issues that are out there. And that's the exciting part, you know. Dr. Larry, you know that how many people have been brought up where they must be a lawyer or they must follow what the parents want them to, and then they struggle with it, but they go off and find that they excel at being a guitar player and a singer or something to that effect, and then they give that back. That's what's exciting, I find.
Oh, I find that as well. You know, I along these lines, I've always been very dubious of this idea of the career path that so many young people think they have to begin, you know, even before they're out of grade school, you know, or they get this trip put on them by their parents. I've never known what I was going to be doing, you know, 6 months down the line. And I'm very dubious of people who really rigidify their lives and concretize them and in a way that if they don't meet their six-month goals, they think their lives are over. I think this is just silly because it leaves no place for spontaneity, for the great mysteries of life and the great unknowns. And I'm a great fan, Deborah, of mystery and the great unknowns.
Yes, that's what makes it fun. And so do you go elsewhere? Now, you talked about going up in the mountains with Barbara. Do you go other places as well?
Well, we have an active travel life because she's the author of 24 books in nursing and holistic studies. And I've written a dozen books about the issues we've been talking about. And we get invited to speak all over the world. So there's always travel in our life, which makes it even more important to leave the urban environment, which most of our talks and visits and lectures are connected with, to retreat to nature, and where we just be for about a month and simply resort to that place where you know every moment that you're part of a living system, and that when you try to structure it, you're going to lose. There's an old saying that nature always wins. And so when you're out in wilderness, you learn how to cooperate. You know how to become humble, because of being in wilderness teaches you one thing. It's humility and surrender and learning how to fit in, because that's the only way you can survive in some of these places, which we've learned in very vivid ways over the decades.
Absolutely. Well, we have just a minute left. What would you like to leave the listeners with?
Well, I think we have a choice. We can listen to the incessant lessons that our culture berates us with, that we're all individuals, we've got to make our own way, we have to be fearful of the other, and defensive, and so on, which sets the stage for selfishness and greed and violence, which is destroying us. On the other hand, we can listen to our own inner voice and pay attention to our own experiences as well. And I want to emphasize this, the actual studies, the actual experiments that assure us and demonstrate to us that we're part of something greater than individuality. And I think unless we learn to temper our individuality with a greater sense of membership in the world out there, I think that we face a very dismal future. We can have this either way. And I think the choice is ours.
Right. And that's it in a nutshell. The choice is ours. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Larry, for coming on the show again. And for everyone out there, you can hear this Tuesday and Friday of this week, 6 a.m., 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Until the next time, thank you so much, Dr. Larry.
Many blessings. Let's do it again.
Yes. Blessings to you. Till the next time, everyone, au revoir.
Are you seeking a clearer path to love? Then tune in to the Love by Intuition show next week. All designed to your highest good. To contact Deborah Bouffet, owner of Empowered Connections, call her at 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or link on to lovebyintuition.com. Remember, we are all one, and we are all part of the miracle of love.